In the military, if you lose your security clearance, you lose your career. Is this something that you want to self-report? If it's too late and they've already presented you with the information, if you disclose more information in an attempt to mitigate the concerns, is it going to cost you your military career? Whereas a civilian, they might just walk away from their security clearance and say, I really don't want to go through this. I don't need this clearance. And if I give them more details, it's going to implicate me in more crimes and I'm going to go to jail. So I'm just going to go get a different job.
Hi, it's Kathleen. Welcome. Today we have a special podcast on veterans and some of the things that you need to consider regarding your security clearance if you're transitioning to the private sector, plus some process differences. Tony Kuhn, managing partner at Telerinky PLLC, will guide us and answer our questions. Tony is an Army veteran and a reservist. It's so great to invite you back, Tony.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kathleen.
I'm going to kick it off with our first question, sort of, a preamble here. When a service member is transitioning to the private sector, there's a lot of things that they need to consider. But one of the items that they really need to keep an eye on is their security clearance. Do you know what your clearance status is? So, Tony, how would you recommend a transitioning service member go about thinking about their status of their security clearance, and when should they be doing this?
So there's a couple of things that you can do, and you should probably be doing this within the final year or so of your military contract. If you intend to go into the government sector or work in some type of position that might require a security clearance, you should check with your security officer and check the status of your clearance. So there's periodic reinvestigations still for individuals that have a secret. It would be every 10 years, a top secret every 5 years. And some people might actually be coming up to the end of their security clearance approval or eligibility period, and they might be transitioning out of the military right around the time they're supposed to be doing their periodic reinvestigation. So if you intend to use your security clearance, you should check into that and see if there's any way to maybe get the ball rolling a little earlier on your periodic reevaluation and make sure that it's not something that's going to happen the same month or shortly after you get out, because then that might cause some issues with your eligibility for your security clearance. So that's one of the things. And you might hear reciprocity talked about a lot and the potential for transferring your security clearance from one position to another. But something to remember there is that not all security clearances are the same. So some agencies might actually require an individual to go through the full process, the application, everything all over again, even if it's within that 2-year window. And the 2-year window that people talk about, it causes a little bit of confusion. Some people think they hold their security clearance for 2 years after they get out of the military. And really, your security clearance goes inactive when you leave the military. But you have 2 years of eligibility where you can apply somewhere, get a new sponsor, and try to get your security clearance to be reactivated. And it's usually pretty easy to do as long as there's no changes in circumstances. But you want to do it as quickly as possible because there could be changes in circumstances, or it could be an issue that it's taken so long that the new sponsor might make you go through the whole process all over again.
I'm really glad that you brought up that timing issue, that they go into an inactive status for 2 years. Is that the case for, secret clearance all the way up, or is it dependent on the clearance level?
That's generally the same rule. And it's, again, it doesn't mean that you can't get a security clearance or that you've completely lost your security clearance. It just means that your security clearance goes inactive and you maintain eligibility to hold that level of clearance, but you need a sponsor to step in and basically turn it back on. If you wait too long, if it's not an immediate transition to a new sponsor, a lot of times they'll make the applicant go through the SF-86 process all over again. If not for a full investigation, then at least just to check in and see if any circumstances have changed that might cause the individual to be denied a clearance or have to go through the full adjudication again.
Awesome. That clarifies things for a lot of our listeners. So when you're talking to transitioning veterans, what are some of the typical security clearance issues that you're seeing them experience?
One that we see that's fairly common, especially an individual who comes in and maybe does a 4-year contract, and it varies. Sometimes you can do a 2-year contract, but the individuals who do the shorter contracts, we might see them get out and have some issues dealing with their initial application. So many people go into the military and they work with a recruiter, and this isn't all recruiters, but they work with a recruiter who is worried about hitting a quota and kind of pushes it through and just assumes that there's nothing to list or there's nothing there. And sometimes the application process isn't as thorough or complete as it should be. And there's information that is left off of the initial security clearance application. And things like drug use could cause all kinds of problems. So the first issue that it could cause is a guideline E violation for failing to disclose that information or intentionally omitting information from the application. So the security clearance holder could actually lose their security clearance if that comes up in a later application that the information was missing. It could also cause problems where the individual has gone into the military. Maybe they have marijuana use in their background or something like that, and they didn't disclose it on their initial entry. So now they have fraudulently enlisted in the military. They have lied on their security clearance application. So there's a lot of things to consider. And for an individual who's had a very short contract, they might come out and want to go into government work. They might have to take a polygraph. They might have to fill out a new SF-86. There's a lot of different things that could happen there that they'll be held liable for that earlier omission. So there's ways to get around it. You can do a written self-report and try to correct the issues as quickly as possible before ever being presented with it. And then you can try to mitigate the issues in the new application if you have to reapply for a security clearance. But there's a couple of different opportunities to do that. It's probably not a good idea to submit a self-report immediately before getting out of the military, because that could trigger an incident report. It could cause an individual to have an open investigation, go into a loss of jurisdiction, which we'll probably talk about more here, I have a feeling. But, you know, it could put an individual in a position where it's really hard to find a new sponsor. So in many cases, it might benefit the service member, the veteran, to wait for that new sponsor and then immediately attempt to correct the information that was previously submitted. And then obviously you got the things like guideline F, financial considerations. You know, people are getting out of the military and they might be struggling to keep up with their bills from the transition. Then there's issues with titling. Unlike a civilian who is investigated and then arrested if there's an incident, in the military, it's a much lower burden for an individual to be investigated and then what we call titled. So titling means that your name is listed in the title for the investigation. That's CID or OSI or whatever the investigating agency is for that military branch. They'll list the individual's name in the title, meaning the individual is now titled, and FBI will track that indefinitely. So an individual might get out of the military, they had a clearance all along, there was no issue, and now they want to go work in a government agency somewhere, and they apply for a security clearance, and an arrest record shows up, and it looks like they were actually convicted of a crime. It happens all the time. So some people reviewing those records, they don't fully understand titling. And then service members sometimes don't report that as an arrest or being charged with something, because technically they weren't arrested. And usually they weren't charged because the commander never preferred charges. So it's a little bit of a semantics issue, gray area when completing the SF-86. But that's something to consider. If you're coming out of the military and you are investigated for some type of potential criminal offense while in the military, even if you were completely acquitted of it, you just have to be prepared to discuss that and disclose it, because you don't want to lose your security clearance or your opportunity to get one because of something simple like that.
If you're still in the service and you get a statement of reasons or have an issue with your security clearance, who do you go to? Who do you trust? Because there are so many different people that are handling your situation, but they're also handling a lot of people. I know it's your responsibility, but how do you handle that and whom do you go to?
That's a great question, because it can be a little bit of a trap. So a service member, there's a security officer that's kind of like a middleman. The paperwork comes down, the notice of intent to deny or revoke the clearance comes down, goes through the local unit security officer, who the applicant might actually know personally, and they say, hey, come into my office. We got this paperwork. They're going to revoke your clearance for drug reasons. Maybe they failed in your analysis, or they fell behind on their bills, or something happened that they got the notice of intent to deny or revoke their clearance. And that security officer often wants to provide information, but they're not a good resource. In almost every case, they're not a good resource because they only have limited knowledge of the actual adjudications or appellate opportunities for the service member, the security clearance holder. So you're going to want to get some assistance outside of your chain of command. You want to talk with a security clearance attorney, even if it's not an attorney, somebody who can help you do a much better job of responding to that statement of reasons. So one of the things that is important for service members and veterans to understand is if the clearance issues occur while you're in the military, you have fewer bites at the apple. You get a written notice of intent to deny or revoke your security clearance, and you have one shot to draft a written response, and that's the only opportunity that you have to mitigate and keep your clearance before it becomes a final decision. Most civilian sector positions, you get the written response, and then you have an opportunity to go to a personal appearance or a hearing, depending on the agency they call it. It's the same thing, but they call it something differently at certain agencies. In the military, that personal appearance or hearing, it's actually a hearing in front of a Doha judge, that is an appeal. That's not part of the original adjudication process. At that point, your clearance has been denied. you have to go to a hearing to try to appeal the decision and get your security clearance back. But that takes so long. Sometimes service members are actually separated for failure to maintain a security clearance by the time that happens. So you want to take this seriously. You want to do the best written response that you possibly can. And a good written response to a statement of reasons, meaning the brief and all of the enclosures, is usually 50 to 150 pages. The last thing you want to do is mark, admit, or deny, and handwrite something on the notice of intent to deny or revoke. I see that advice often. A service member gets notification and somewhere in there it says, just write admit or deny. You can even write it on the same piece of paper, or their security officer tells them to do that and they send that back. That's great. You're being honest, but you're not providing any mitigation. You're not setting yourself up to actually keep your security clearance. You're just admitting that you did something wrong, which gives them grounds to suspend or revoke your security clearance. So sit down with somebody who can give you some advice and help put together a really good written work product. And know that if you submit a really good written work product, you probably have a very good chance of keeping your security clearance, because it's actually pretty easy to do because you're already in the military. You're somebody that the government thinks is trustworthy, is reliable, and should probably have a security clearance. So you have a better chance of keeping it with a written response if you're a military member than you do if you're a civilian.
So how would you handle things differently after transitioning to the civilian sector? So we talked about you would be filling out a work product, a written statement. How would that be a different process in the civilian sector?
It's a similar process. The biggest difference, as I said, is you have the hearing for a civilian is usually part of the adjudication process. There's a really good chance that you're going to get an opportunity to go to a hearing if the written submission fails to mitigate the government's concerns. And it gives you another bite at the apple. So you have the opportunity to go onto a hearing. And you're also in your written submission this time, you're requesting a hearing. If it's not in your paperwork somewhere, we always add in a paragraph requesting a hearing. If the written submission fails to mitigate the government's concerns, we would like to have a personal appearance or a hearing to be able to do that. So you handle it a little differently, still want to do a really good written work product, but you're always gearing up for this hearing because the hearing is generally your best opportunity to convince a judge or an adjudicator that you are trustworthy, reliable, and should be granted access or continued access.
Awesome. And how did you know that I started eating apples again? You've talked about the various different guidelines, the financial or, you know, some of the other more colorful ways that you might be going through adjudication. So tell us a little bit more about the differences between a military versus a non-military adjudication and how those adjudications impact someone's career.
So usually there's negative information that comes to light. Often there's criminal implications. So if it's drug use or some type of fraud or theft or something like that, you'll have the potential to go to jail. And I think the biggest thing to consider when you're looking at how important is your security clearance in the military, if you lose your security clearance, you lose your career. So if there's something that's going to cost you your military career, is this something that you want to self-report? Is this something that you want to try to get ahead of? Do you want to try to mitigate? If it's too late and they've already presented you with the information, if you disclose more information in an attempt to mitigate the concerns, is it going to cost you your military career? Whereas a civilian, they might just walk away from their security clearance and say, I really don't want to go through this. I don't need this clearance. And if I give them more details, it's going to implicate me in more crimes and I'm going to go to jail. So I'm just going to go get a different job. So that's something that you have to consider. If you're in the military, you can't just leave and go get a different job. If you don't fully cooperate with the process, you're going to lose your security clearance and you're going to get kicked out of the military because that security clearance is a requirement for military service. But at the same time, if you disclose too much information, you could potentially be prosecuted under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. There's a good chance that you're going to be separated. But if you provide too much information, you're actually going to be prosecuted and separated, and you're going to have a really hard time getting a job or a different sponsor ever again. I think those are the two biggest differences between whether you're in the military or you're out of the military. And then, of course, we already talked through the titling. We didn't really talk through loss of jurisdiction much.
Yeah, let's do that.
Great. So an individual who is in the civilian sector, they have a security clearance. And just like military, if you get caught up in some type of investigation with your current sponsor, then you leave that sponsor while there's an open investigation, meaning you quit your job or you get fired while there's an open investigation, you go into a loss of jurisdiction. It's very difficult to get out of that because everybody that's potentially going to pick you up for a job and sponsor you for a security clearance sees that you're flagged in the system and they would have to submit a customer service request to basically get the process going again to complete the investigation, whatever's going on in the background that caused you to get flagged. So the military is no different. If you are caught up in something in the military right before you transition out of the military, regardless of whether you're kicked out or not, if something happens and you're administratively separated, or you put in paperwork for what we call a Chapter 10, or some type of separation in lieu of court martial, if you do any of those things, or you fail a drug test on your way out the door, something like that, there's a really good chance you're going to be flagged by the security officer, and you're going to have a hard time, because when you go into the civilian sector, they're going to see the flag. It's the same type of loss of jurisdiction. You lost your sponsor, which is the military, and you had an open investigation when you got out of the military. So when you try to carry that clearance over into the civilian sector, they're going to see that. They're still going to have to file the same customer service request, go through all the same stuff that they would have to go through for a civilian. So just something to keep in mind on your way out the door.
Really glad you brought that up, because any of the times that I've presented at a TAP or an ACAP meeting, you know, we really don't talk about security clearance and all of the various different levels that people have to keep an eye on. It. Everyone's so focused on the door and what's on the other side of that door that they sort of forget what they need to bring with them and educate them on that. So you obviously have done your transition, and you've obviously helped a lot of people through their transitions. What are one or two really big tips that you think people should hear that they don't hear?
There's a couple simple ones. You get out of the military, try to stay up on your bills. I know it's going to be tough. You're transitioning to a new job, a new career field. Maybe you don't have much money saved up because, let's face it, the military doesn't pay great. So you're getting out and you're transitioning into this whole new world. And for someone who's been doing it for 20 years, it's a big transition. But you have to do everything you can to try to stay ahead of your bills or show that you acted responsibly given the circumstances. So if it's, you know, letting a very expensive car go that you can't afford the payments on, over, you know, losing your house or falling behind on certain types of student loans is a big one. You owe the federal government money. Make sure you're paying that money. You know, that should be your priority, because the federal government is who's going to say whether you get a clearance or not. So that's important. Don't think that filing for bankruptcy protection is always a bad thing. It might be the responsible thing to do given the circumstances. It's not automatically going to cost you your clearance. There's certain things that you have to consider. And the biggest thing is, am I doing the responsible thing given the circumstances? Can I explain this and mitigate concerns? And guideline F is a big one. The financial considerations is a big one for people transitioning from one career to another. Just the fact that you're transitioning from one career to another is mitigating in and of itself. So do the responsible thing, whatever that might be at the time, and you'll probably keep your security clearance even if you run into financial difficulties. But I have to say that right now, probably the one that everybody needs to hear is just say no. You know, people are getting out of the military, and I think marijuana is legalized now in 38 states or more. It's really easy for a service member, especially someone doing a 4-year contract or something like that, that hung around with a certain group of people before they went into the military. They go home, they're surrounded by their friends. Guess what? Marijuana is legal now. You can go right to the local dispensary and buy some marijuana, and it's legal. The reality is, it's not really legal. Federal government hasn't legalized it. So if you hold a security clearance and you go to a dispensary or something like that, or you use marijuana with friends when you get out, you are setting yourself up for future issues trying to keep that security clearance, because not only have you used marijuana, which is a violation of one of the adjudicative guidelines, but now you've used marijuana while holding a security clearance or while being eligible for a security clearance. That's a bigger problem. If you hold a security clearance, you're supposed to know that you're not supposed to use illegal drugs. It's difficult enough to mitigate marijuana use. It's very difficult to mitigate marijuana use for someone who actually has a security clearance. So think about that long and hard before you do something like that. You know, if you want to use your security clearance down the road, it's going to be difficult to keep the security clearance.
Those are really great tips. And Tony, it's always wonderful chatting with you. And it's always great to hear your knowledge on security clearances, which really helps us. So thanks again for being with me today.
It's my pleasure. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Tony is so phenomenal at explaining security clearance issues in layman's terms. I really appreciated him talking about the ins and outs of your overall transition and many of the things you need to think about. I really liked his tips at the end of, understanding you will be in different financial circumstances between being in the military and out of the military, and you might trigger some guideline F issues. And also, just say no, because you're still a security clearance holder. So thanks again for taking the time to join me today, learning more about your security clearances and the important issues for your cleared career. If you learned something today, please share it, review us, and make sure that all of your friends who are in the cleared community know that they can find out key information here at Security Cleared Jobs, Who's Hiring and Now and How.